here we come around the bend in the old wooden wagon, Tom. Yes, there's news and there's opinion. A friend of mine said the other day, I can't tell the difference between the news and opinion. I said, the opinion is when the show gets interesting. When you mix the two together, you get a big pile of manure. You put in a wagon, we head on back. There's an old horse named Patrick that sits next to you. I now pull the wagon. Yes! Yes! Alrighty. I went to a doctor yesterday. He's a big fan of the show, Tom. I didn't realize that. He goes,
really?
He goes, you have dyslexia. You also have ADD. I've heard you on the radio. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
He listens well.
Apparently, he texts a lot, too.
Do no harm. Not to my ego. Not to my ego. All righty. Quiet there, Andrew. Here we go. Dow Constantine wants to leverage conservation and a fund to buy 65,000 acres of the last best places. I remember it was Mayor Mike, was it McGinn? Mayor Mike McGinn told me one time, he said, I remember getting off an airplane, flying into SeaTac, and looking down and not seeing a lot of trees. And he said, I remember saying to myself, we're supposed to be the Emerald City. We should have more trees. We need more trees. And they always say the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. In this case, Dal Constantine is looking around, and he sees all of this beautiful trails. He sees wooded areas. He sees open farmlands. And he says, you know what? If we don't do something about this now, if we don't buy this land and conserve this land, this will be gobbled up by development.
Yeah, and this the 65,000 acres of open space, they're trying to purchase it over the course of 30 years. This isn't like one big fell swoop. But the idea is, his argument is that land values are going to drive prices even higher and higher, and some of those properties will be lost. So if we get in now, when the going is relatively good, we can still do that. And it's the only problem I see with this is that how much are we spending vis-a-vis the immediate crises that we're dealing with in terms of the homeless and all of that. But in general, I think there are a lot of good environmentalists and conservationists here that feel like, yeah, this is a good thing. And it's not just one particular forest. There's, you know, we're talking about farmland and streams and trails and forests and everything else that I think this is a good thing, and they use some kind of mechanism that was passed into law, I think, back in 1982, mm-hmm. that allows for us to sell bonds, and then the value of those bonds allow us to purchase things over the course of time. But mm-hmm. I don't know
the
if
bonds allow you to get the cash now.
Yes.
Yeah. Listen, riding the motorcycle around and going way out into the hinterlands. I do this with Dave. I ride with Dave every couple of weeks.
Huh.
And you're just, it really is. If you get out of the city, there are so many beautiful spots. And you would hate to think, like, pretty soon there's going to be another development there, another one here, and they're going to cut it, another cookie cutter sort of cul-de-sac there and there. And to be able to save it, I have no problem with it. There's an interesting thing. We used to do things called transfer of development rights. And that works where if you're a farmer and you've got a bunch of land, well, the value of your land, you can't possibly grow enough, you know, rutabagas or whatever.
Yeah.
Because somebody could come in and say, hey, we're going to build a bunch of houses. Will you sell us your farmland? Well, the person likes to drive by and take a look at your farm, and there's something nice about it.
Yeah.
So transfer development rights say, I'll tell you what, the developer will come in and buy your property from you. But you can't do anything to the property. You have to keep it as a farm. But then what happens is what the developer gets in return, because he doesn't actually get your land, he gets these things called TDRs, which would allow him, if he wants to transfer to it to a place like, for instance, Sammamish. Sammamish might have a building code that only allows him to go three stories. But because he's got these TDRs, he can now go five stories. So he can convert them into something else that benefits him. And it's pretty smart, isn't it? So the farmer has to keep his land. That's the one thing on him, but everybody okay with that. The developer gets what he wants, which is increased money. So he's able to pack more people in or go up higher. And that's a nice trade-off. They're not used often because it's hard to find a landing site. Like, what city will allow that developer to cash in those TDRs?
Yeah.
But it's a great way to keep that farmland, especially out in Snohomish and other areas like that. Just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Good for you, Dal. By the way, I think King County has record revenues. So they got tons of money. And I think they're looking for ways to spend it. I know that occasionally they run a deficit, but they're spending more of your money to save more land. If you ever go to a concert and you find yourself sitting in the stands or standing, because everybody else is standing as well, and they all pull out their cell phones, and everybody's got their cell phone there. Not only is it annoying to you, which we'll get to that in a second, but it's also really annoying to the performer.
That's right.
In fact, this is a famous clip from Adele at a concert when she stopped to talk to somebody who had a cell phone out.
Yeah, I want to tell that lady as well, can you stop filming me with a video camera, because I'm really here in real life. You can enjoy it in real life rather than through your
She later on, Adele was asked about it. She said, when you pick up the phone and hold the phone up, you're experiencing it through the phone.
Yes, that's true. And even worse, you're sometimes experiencing it through somebody else's phone who's holding it up right in front of
and
you.
And you're like, hey, they got a pretty good shot. It is annoying.
I just went to see Rufus Wainwright, and there was somebody who was sitting right in front of me, and he only pulled it out during the encores, but still, it's like, it is a distraction to everybody else in the theater. I don't know if the performer saw it in that case, but yeah, I mean, it's a real problem, and one of the great things, we've got this 19-year-old guy from University of Washington who figured out, he's part of, he came from Chicago, and he's part of this group at the University of Washington. They got this grant from Amazon Catalyst. So the tech giant works with UW, and they said, come up with something that would be helpful and practical. And this guy ended up, inventing. Now, it's still in the prototype stage, so we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. But basically, it's a headband with a camera in it.
Ugh.
And so you can go, and the idea is, so you could go to a concert, instead of holding up your... You're just looking at the concert, so you can't complain about somebody's head being in the way, because that person, their head's going to be in the way whether they have the camera or not, whether they have the phone or not. This is an idea where you just wear a headband, and it'll be technologically sophisticated enough that you'll be able to, record what you're seeing without objecting, without getting in the way of anybody else. I think it's a fantastic idea if they can pull it off. Now, one of the problems, though, is that...
The name? The douchebag band?
Do I know? No, yeah. No, it's called it's kind of a cool name. You don't know the name?
No, I know.
It's called the Glimpse Cam.
Oh, okay. Oh.
The Glimpse Cam. So you just get a glimpse.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just
and it's really tiny. It's
okay.
I know how you love those Google glasses, John.
I got a pair of them on right now.
This guy loved the Google glasses, but he realized the problem with Google glasses is they assume that you would want to wear them all the time.
Yeah.
No, he says, what you need to do is you need a technology that people can put on or off.
Yeah.
So his proposal is that you don't buy these, you don't get them and bring them to the concert. The concert themselves, whoever's putting on the concert, it's part of the ticket price and or part of the branding.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the show, and you can just wear them and, take them with you and have them for access. What his big goal, though, is, and this I don't think is going to happen, he says, I want to convince people to leave their phones at home when they go
no
to a concert.
Way.
And I say, yeah, that is way too idealistic. People have too many other reasons to look at their phones.
Mm-hmm.
This one takes care of one of those functions, which is maybe to record the festival. But he says, I just think the world would be better off. And then he goes into a typical kind of post-tech rant about how we live on our screens too much.
Too bad.
But still...
now you get around people looking at their phones at a concert.
Yeah.
Just get higher.
I think it's a brilliant idea. Congratulations. We should mention his name.
They should throw his name in there. He's 19 years old. He's still with dreams. He's got lots of dreams, Tom.
Dylan Rose. That sounds like a classic made-up name.
kid with a dream. The case of the parents attempting to evict the 30-year-old kid. Now, we talked about this the other day. We knew they were going to court, so this is great. So they live in Syracuse, New York. They got a nice-looking home, and the kid ends up in court. He's wearing a red shirt, a black tie, and an ill-fitting suit, and he's got very long hair and a beard.
Very long hair, but is it a suit or a sports coat? But anyway, he was dressed up.
Yeah.
And
he represents himself in court.
Yes,
so,
as an idiot,
Tom,
for a client.
Do you want to tell me why you're sympathetic? Or the guy better now? Or you want to hear the cuts?
So sympathetic. You misrepresented my stance, but it was for a tease. And so that's
okay. Legally, it's all right then. Okay,
exactly.
Go ahead.
But no, I was happily surprised to see that he was more functional than I expected. When you hear about a 30-year-old who just sits at home and he doesn't lift a finger, I thought he would be a very kind of dysfunctional person who just was kind of like shut off the world and would be kind of an embarrassment out. Instead, he's proud of what he's doing. He dresses up. He argues before the court. He makes a point. He's much more active for a guy who is this sort of deactive in his life. I was pleasantly surprised that he's got more on the ball than I expected him to have.
Okay, so you assume that he would be like just a total slug.
Yeah,
He's not dumb. He's living rent-free. Right.
Oh, now you're starting to like him,
no,
too.
No, I don't like him. When the judge said,
he's a libertarian,
why don't you
freeloader?
Go live with your girlfriend? He's like, I'm 30. I live in the basement of my parents' house. I don't have a job. There is no girlfriend. Okay, so this
he didn't say that.
I think he did.
That was the late night comedian, James.
Here we go. You can mix James a little Gordon. Humor in. Yeah. All right, here's the 30-year-old loser explaining, talk to Inside Edition outside the legal proceedings, explaining his parents are being too tough on him.
I don't see why the judge wants to throw people on the street.
His parents filed the extraordinary lawsuit following months of repeated attempts to get him to leave their home in Syracuse, New York. And the story is getting lots of attention.
A judge asked why he didn't just move in with his girlfriend. And the man said, girlfriend, I'm a 30-year-old man.
Hey, he stole my joke.
Living at home. Dude, there's no girlfriend.
Stole my joke.
I just say,
it's the first empty nest by eviction.
Yes.
We are men who still live at home.
Yes.
It's reminding many of a real-life failure to launch. The 2006 movie star.
How was that movie?
You know, it's a typical rom-com.
Okay. Starring Matthew McConaughey and Bradley Cooper.
Because it's going to take a stick of dynamite to get me out of my parents' house.
Out of my parents' house. You get a Lincoln Continental drive away in it. Mike said he and his parents weren't really communicating at all anyway outside the court.
Well, we don't talk. We stay out of his way. There's no, there's been no instances of anything.
We just don't communicate.
Michael wore a suit and tie for his big day in court. His hair hung way past his shoulders. He represented himself and wasn't exactly a legal eagle, arguing with the judge throughout the hearing.
I'm telling you, it's not in proper form.
It's my
case. I understand, but it's not in proper form.
So then he leaves his podium and then kind of rushes up to the judge.
He doesn't rush up.
He rushed enough.
He approaches
for a slug
the bench
quickly, and security moves in on this loser.
The judge seemed fed up as he issued his ruling.
I'm granting the eviction because I'm concerned about what's going on in this household. So I don't want you on that household.
Michael continued to argue even after the case was closed.
Sir, I've already ruled.
His parents had no comment as they left the courtroom.
Good.
There you go. But
yeah,
becoming the activist that he now has realized he can become, he's going to take it to the next. He's going to appeal
Supreme
his
Court.
Case. Yes, to the Supreme Court. They finally got him off the couch.
But what right? He has no right. The Supreme Court will never take the case. What is his right?
Yes.
And what are his damages? His parents, he's living there by the goodness and grace of the parents. They asked him to, why don't you get your life together and get out?
I know. Right. Way to go out on a limb and condemn this guy, John.
No, way to support him. Oh, I thought he's going to be a real slug. He's not
interesting.
That much of a slug.
I mean, they list, we played in that clip because that was a package. All these people, you know, on this the morning shows, it's so terrible. It's so terrible.
I like him. Yeah. So the judge is okay with throwing people out into the street? No. He's not saying go out into the street. He's saying get a job and go get your own house.
I know. And guess what, John? He should and he'll have to.
I think I'm going to take a lot of this. I'm going to direct back to Barack Obama.
Of course are.
You turn
to right.
So you can keep
get
your
a haircut, kid.
Hold on. You keep your. Well, that's coming. You can keep your kid on your health plan until 26 years old. They're not kids. Yeah, that's on your health plan. So, like, that is not a good thing.
No, it doesn't mean the kids. My kid was on until 26, but she wasn't living in my basement.
I know she wasn't living in the basement. I got it, but I'm just saying, just generally, the idea that, when you're still 20, when you're 26, you're not an adult. You're an adult at 18.
Get your act together. Get a haircut.
Oh, man.
Hey, we're going on his red shirt and his black tie.
Yeah, he looked much better than I expected.
He's in a Flock of Seagulls video from 1985.
That's right. Yeah.
All right.
He's stuck in a time warp.
Epic. This is how it's being described by those people that are crying about the Supreme Court decision regarding employment. Here's the way it works. when you are an employee and the employer hires you, you might sign something saying, yes, I'll work for you and I'll do this and I'll do that. You sign a little thing. Maybe somewhere in the contract.
Maybe. You have a microscope, you might be able to read it.
It would say, if there's any problem with you and me, the employer and the employee, mm-hmm. you cannot band together with other employees mm-hmm. and take me to court. It That's has right. to be done through this thing called arbitration.
Arbitration.
All right.
right. Yeah.
And because what they were filing was a 1925 Federal Arbitration Act of 1925. So corporations can tell employees you can't band with others and bring your problems to court. You are on your own and you and I can work it out. Okay.
But that should have been preempted by a 1935 NLRB ruling that said that employees have the right to self-organization to form and join or assist in local labor organizations. And so that was the dispute.
Right.
Because they were in conflict with each other.
So then the Supreme Court, Gorsuch says, how do you say his last name?
Gorsuch.
Gorsuch says, look, the problem is with the legislators. If it's unclear, we're going to yield to the 1925 instead of the 1935. So come up with a better law. Just tell us, does one trump the other? And then we'll rule on that. Here's the thing. There was on PBS interviewed this woman who's follows all the Supreme Court stuff. Okay. She sort of explains the problem for the employee is when it comes to arbitration, what's that mean? So you'd go to your employer.
Yeah.
Hey, I think you're kind of cheating me on something. And the employer goes, oh, okay, well, then let's get ourselves an arbitrator.
Basically, it's saying that if you have a claim against the employer, you have to go into private arbitration. In that kind of a proceeding, generally the employer finds an arbitrator.
I'm sure that'll be fair.
There are associations of arbitrators to come in. It's supposed to be a neutral arbitrator to hear your claim and make a decision. You are bound by that decision. Roughly 25 million employees in the United States are under these arbitration agreements that include bans on collective or class actions.
And these are clauses many times people have no idea they're really even signing, right?
Generally not. Sometimes they're in very small print.
That's why you should always read. First of all, get yourself a haircut, get out of your parents' basement, and read. Just read all the way through the 18-page contract regarding arbitration. How about that? Yeah, the employer, you got a problem? Okay, we'll get an arbitrator
in. Hey, Jerry, I want you to come over here and arbitrate for us.
Yeah. Wait, Jerry?
I don't know Jerry from Adam.
Oh, I know Jerry. I play golf with him on Saturdays.
Exactly.
All right, listen, this one will
He's good people.
You're going to love him. He's married to my sister, as a matter of fact.
Right.
So if I don't know if this gets challenged again or what will end up happening is it goes probably go back to the House or Senate and they start to kick this thing around and just determine, you know, which one of these would apply. Is it the 1935 NLRA or the one on the regarding the. The FAA. So, all right, there you go. That's all the news you need. We'll come right back. Get yourself a haircut. Get out of your parents' basement. And you should not be so hard on yourself. That's actually the next segment.
Oh, that applies to that guy.
Yes, right back. All right, writing to us is good and good for you. 9 out of 10 dentists recommend that you do write to the Tom and Curly Show. On a regular basis. You got to do it on a regular basis, and you'll get better at it. In fact, if you were to spend, say, 20 hours, committing 20 hours to writing to the Tom and Curly Show, you will become a much better writer, and you might even become letter of the day. That's where you get a chance to have your word be the final word on the show. We always hear about people saying, well, you got to do 10,000 hours. Well, Michael Jordan shot 10,000 hours of basketball and Bill Gates programmed for 10,000 hours. You got to do 10,000 hours. The problem is, you think about that, it's like, well, I'd like to learn to play the banjo. Well, 10,000 hours of learning to play the banjo? I don't think I want to play the banjo.
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. What do I get out of that?
And ever since Gladwell popularized that, it's been disproven. I think that there are a lot of things you can't do even if you take 15,000 hours. So.
Well, I mean, depending on what you want, like I want to play in the PGA. I want to play in the Masters in 5 years.
Yeah, right.
You might put 10,000 hours in. You might never make it. Might just not have the skills. So another guy comes along and says, you know what? You don't have to do 10,000 hours to become good at something. Josh Kaufman says, you know what? It's a little less than 10.
You can go from knowing nothing about any skill that you can think of. Want to learn a language? Want to learn how to draw? Want to learn how to juggle flaming chainsaws? If you put 20 hours of focused, deliberate practice into that thing, you will be astounded, astounded at how good you are.
But there's three things.
The first is to deconstruct the skill.
Okay.
Decide exactly what you want to be able to do when you're done, and then look into the skill and break it down into smaller and smaller pieces. And if you practice the most important things first, you'll be able to improve your performance in the least amount of time possible.
Getting that?
The second is learn enough to self-correct. The third is to remove barriers to practice. Distractions, television, internet, all of these things that get in the way of you actually sitting down and doing the work.
Okay.
Okay. I think that seems reasonable on the face of it. It depends on what you're... It sounds like he's focusing on a very kind of physical accomplishment.
Yeah, play the piano things. or something like that.
Playing the piano. The idea of self-correcting. I think that's an interesting wrinkle. Yeah, if you are devoting 20 hours and you don't know what you're doing wrong or how you can fix what you're doing wrong, you could be learning something wrong for 20 hours.
And never, create the habit.
Exactly. So that is, I think, is a crucial point. Yeah, you've got to make sure that whatever you're learning, you know how to fix what you're doing wrong when you're doing that. Now, I can see, for instance, playing the piano. I mean, I took piano when I was a kid. I can't play piano now, but my hunch is that if I took 20 hours and, again, got rid of the distractions, that's easy enough said. I think I know from past experience what I need to do to work on and stuff, and now I just need to clear 20 hours of my schedule. I could probably play the piano, at least play a tune.
But according to him, you'd want to find out, okay, what do you want in the end? Like, ultimately say, okay, I want to be able to play Yellow Rose of Texas.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, and like I want to be able to get through the whole thing without mistakes. So that's my goal is. So then it's just playing that same thing, learning that music over and over.
What I like about his philosophy is that 20 hours is not that much time. I mean, it's a lot of time for our busy lives. But I mean, in 20, there are a lot of things that I think a lot of us think, oh, well, I'll never learn how to do that or I'll never do that. Mm-hmm. But if you think I could probably do, a nice approximation of that, if I just devoted 20 hours, if you set that as a project, you probably whittle away 20 hours in a month, you know, without even noticing.
Are you working on anything, any new skill?
New skill, no. What I'm doing is I'm going to Austria for my summer vacation, so I'm reading up about a bunch of this. So, I mean, it's kind of like research stuff that I always feel like whatever free time I have, I try to do more so I can get more out of my trip. That's not really a new skill. How about you? You are doing all sorts of new skills, John. You are a new painter. You're a new dancer. You're practically a new man.
Well, I'm working on new stuff. 2018 is new stuff. So I'm working on my watercolors. Plus, I'm trying to learn how to play the ukulele.
Oh, you are.
So I do watercolors every day for 1 hour.
Wow.
And so talk about self-correcting.
Days, yeah.
You could, because like I'm working on trees right now. And I'm like, God, that looks nothing like a birch. So I'm like, what am I doing wrong? So I keep watching the same video over and over again. I've watched this guy paint these trees for 20 hours.
Now you see it.
Plus, the other thing was, I want to learn how to play a particular song on the electric guitar. So at auctions, when people have stopped bidding and they're thinking about bidding as a way of getting them to like bid or to fill the empty space of them while they're thinking about it, because some of these items are selling for $300,000.
Yeah.
And the person's thinking, do I want to spend $300,000? So what I normally do is I press a button and play the music, but I'm going to grab a guitar, strap that on, and
then press a button.
And no, not press a button. Strap that on.
And actually play it.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, is this it? A, G, D.
Is this Train?
C. No, it's Nickelback.
Oh, Nickelback. Just as good.
D, A. Those are the chords. I'm working on that.
Okay, that's good.
So I asked Mike West, Vinny. I said, hey, Mike, who's your guitar player? Who taught you? And he sent me the name of the person. I'm going to call her up. And I said, I want to learn this. I want to learn how to play Photograph by Nickelback so that I can antagonize people at auctions. And he's like, okay. Yeah. Here's her name.
When she heard the request, she doubled her price. Nickelback. But you started off the conversation by saying you were trying to learn the ukulele.
But I'm trying to learn. Yes, because the other one I want to learn how to play is that Somewhere of the Rainbow.
On the ukulele.
On the ukulele.
Which is really easy.
How about Tiptoe Through the Tulips?
No, no one wants to do that. You know, the one that Israel, whatchamacallit, the great big fat guy in the pool that had a heart attack that plays Somewhere Over the Rainbow. You never heard that? On the ukulele? Andrew, you with me on that?
It's Isaac Kamayahena or something. Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce the name. Yeah.
May you rest in peace.
I hear it.
May you rest in peace. Okay, good. So there you go. And you're working on your what?
Well, I do like research, so I when I travel someplace, I'm reading a bunch of stuff by Ludwig Bemelmans for his biographical.
I think the hard part of the 20-hour thing is by like the third hour, you're bored. If you're not showing progress, that's what happens. You get an initial blast of like, hey, check that out, and then you plateau on something. It's getting past the plateau stage where you're like, God, I'm not getting any positive reinforcement.
Well,
it's not
good.
Getting any better. It's not getting any better. And that's, I think, when most people drop out of a new skill.
Yeah.
A language, they're still struggling with Mi padre trabaja en la biblioteca. And they're like, I can't say anything else other than
that's
that.
That's good. Yeah, you need fortitude.
Yes.
You need to sort of make sure, okay, I'm going to do this, you know, that determination, or you'll drop it after a couple hours.
Right. And also, don't self-judge. I don't know if we have time for this quick last story, but apparently everybody is too hard on themselves, and you're supposed to be easier on yourself, and therefore you will be able to enjoy yourself more.
They said that the problem with self-criticism is an evolutionary development. It helped us keep alive, and we learned to sort of self-correct, as you mentioned in the earlier story. But the problem is that ends up backfiring on us. If the idea is that whatever doubts we have about ourselves are to make us aware of the fact that we're not perfect and we need to improve on that, we tend, as 21st century adults, tend to hyper-focus on our failings, and that gets in the way of the original evolutionary process, which was to make us figure out what we need to improve on and improve it. Instead, we become obsessive about what we can't do, and that prevents us from actually improving ourselves. So they say you need to teach yourself some self-compassion. Like, you know what? Yeah, you can't do that, but you can do all these other things, and that means that you can also have the confidence to go ahead and make this better too. If you say something to somebody and you think you know it was the wrong thing to say to your boss or your coworker or something, don't focus on that too much. Tomorrow is another day, and so just, you know, pick back up. It's just we make too big a deal about things that aren't really that important.
If you do something wrong, like drop something and cause a spill, or do you talk to yourself in the negative or the positive? Like, oh, you're so stupid. Like, if you lose your keys, do you speak to yourself and use swears and things? I was really into doing a whole bunch of running and stuff, I used to, come on, you.
Really?
Yeah. So I was
yourself.
Yes.
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 No, it's funny. I don't think there's no condemnation.
You're so dumb. Ah. I can't think of anything.
I mean, I feel that way, but I don't accuse myself of being dumb. That's like a mad
come on,
that
Tom.
Happened, but I don't
I'm
think
so
that it's,
stupid.
Yeah.
God, I'm dumb. I'm Tom and I'm dumb. I mean, do you say that? Do you say enough
never.
Of that?
In fact, it never even occurs to me. Just because I'm frustrated doesn't mean I blame myself.
I'll play the chords for you.
Okay.
G, C, D, it's easy. Here we go. Ooh, 20 hours of this. He's going to get to it. You never heard this?
No, I know it. Yeah,
oh, okay, yeah.
It's very familiar.
You're seeing it? Missed a meal. There you go. All right, letters, pour them in. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Well, one of you gets a chance to be letter of the day. Right back.
And the dreams that you dream of once in a love.
Bum. Doug's Linwood Mazda. I got all sorts of Mazdas there. Take your car in there for service, Doug's Linwood Mazda. You probably won't need it because those Mazdas are reliable. Get your Mazda at Doug's Linwood Mazda, and thanks for sponsoring. Here comes the mailman in a brand new Mazda right now.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There's a teeny tiny lady who spends every single day of her life, and she loves it, Tom. She's very, very happy there in her teeny tiny pickle jar. I just can't find her. Where is she? Oh, there she is. Hey, teeny tiny lady. How are you?
Hello.
Who moved her? Somebody moved her. There's a sign that says, don't touch the lady in the pickle jar.
You need that facial recognition software to find her some days.
She's looking right at me. Yes, you. Hey, we'll get to the letter of the day.
Yes, we will. But first, we'll start off with some good vibes all around today.
Oh, right.
Kristen, the dog walker, wants to weigh in.
Oh, good.
Born free?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I can't handle this caliber of rock music so early in the morning. Yikes. My day goes nowhere but down from here.
They've rocked it, Tom.
Born Free. Born Free was John's rock and roll coming out party song. Oh, my God.
Guys, rabbit bats and chicken feathers, a perfect new name for the Tom and Curly show. How about that guy has the bat was stuck on his hand?
No. 425, I have a quick question about John pulling the wagon.
Mm-hmm.
How is he continuing to pull the wagon whilst diving into the news?
Yeah,
wouldn't the wagon follow him into the pond?
It's rolling on sort of, it gets momentum, and then it stops right at the side because there's these like things that stop the wagon.
Spikes.
Yes.
If you go over, you'll catch
it. Right,
a
like if you're renting
player.
A car from Hertz. 425, Curly's affection for Nickelback is by default Tom's redeeming quality.
Wow. That is
well written.
Yeah, brilliant.
Brilliant.
Our matching shirts today, John. Mm-hmm. 425. You guys are so cute. All coordinated and all. Like Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger in Twins.
Oh, that was a good movie. Touche, Tom. John does look smarter when he dresses up like Tom. That's my
And
idea.
How many hours do we need to master a skill? Brian in Auburn. Tom, you need to spend 20 hours working on not being a liberal.
Okay, 253. I'm starting my 10,000 hours of writing you. Man, are my fingers going to get tired. There's no crying in baseball.
Our 30-year-old, now evicted freeloader, mm-hmm. Charlene and Edmonds. I've listed homes for couples who can't get rid of their lazy, sleazebag adult kids out of the lower level of their home. Sometimes, straight up selling the home is the best option. Mm. Short of removing all the belongings and changing the locks, the parents usually buy a really small home. Out at 18!
425, the gym floor you were talking about was Bishop Blanchett's Catholic High School
really?
In Seattle.
Wow, that's my alma mater.
How about that?
I didn't know that. Nobody likes those losers who film live shows on their phones. 206 says the band Tool and A Perfect Circle will kick you out for recording their concerts. I love that.
That's good. Amazon's facial recognition software in use by police. Hey, guys, the Department of Licensing here in Seattle uses facial recognition software to catch people who are fraudulently getting driver's license and ID
there
cards.
You go. Okay. And a Jim and Elma, Tom, you and John are in the government's database. You are both fully in the open. Passports, driver's license, security cams, internet. Don't worry, though. My research shows you are both not under serious surveillance.
Not serious, anyway. Am I in a cam? Do they save this stuff? Because I flip off the 520 bridge every day. Do I? Am I in? Even on my motorcycle. That's really freeing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom. Hey, Tom. What happened in Deadpool again? Yeah. 253. Thanks for the Deadpool 2 spoiler, Tom. Damn communist.
And 253, damn you, Tom. Spoiler alert. Blows himself up in the first 5 minutes. I was just going to see Dad.
But there's more to it after that.
No, it's the opening. It's a very opening scene. The very opening. It's a big.
How's it end?
It's a big gag. Same way it opens. He blows himself up.
No. 443. If you buy a house, your housing costs don't go up 10% a year. That only happens to renters. Now I was talking about the houses on the market.
Yeah. Yeah. The price.
Yeah. Houses are going up.
206. Don't forget the 2008-2009 housing collapse was preceded by the rise in oil and gas prices, mm-hmm. kind of like what is occurring now.
Okay. 206. I get pissed when I hold a door open for someone and I don't get a thank you. I will say loudly, "You're welcome," while staring at them.
Really?
I do the same.
No, you do?
I do.
You get mad at somebody?
Yes.
Well, then don't open the door for them.
I can't help it. I'm a good person until you don't thank me.
Until you insult them.
That's not an insult. It's an insult that what, they're such zombies so asleep they don't realize I've done a favor for them.
It's like, it's not a favor.
You're welcome.
It is effect a return favor. That's interesting. I think you'd be
think
better
most
off
people,
not opening
no,
it.
No, most people would feel the same way.
And say, "You're welcome." You might feel that way,
but you
don't
say
"you're welcome."
Way.
Yeah, exactly.
You do.
Yeah, oh, Mr. Passive-Aggressive over there.
And you're welcome.
That's terrible.
And I've taught my kids that. We're passing that one on.
Okay. As a vet, I get tired of someone thanking me for my service. Well, just like the bus driver, it's my job. Stop thanking me for doing my job. It makes us feel uncomfortable.
Mm.
Wow.
360 says, really, Tom? You think driving a bus through downtown Seattle, easy task? Don't believe you've ever tried it.
Thank you.
Of course. I love bus drivers. I wouldn't
you
do
said
that
it was an easy task. You said you'd do it while you're asleep.
It's basically a service, and I don't think they expect it, but we all get it.
It's a little
we have to move on to the letter of the
and
day.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Piggy in Rochester. So, Tommunist, crime rises to the top, eh? Well, as your most qualified candidate to ever run for office proves regularly, cream isn't the only thing that floats. Oh, congratulations on your show floating to number one.
Auto time.
Hooray for
bye,
fiber.
Bye.